All right, our agenda is here. Today on the agenda is discussion around the recruiting document that Brian has put together. It's kind of a straw document. An update on the credential management API and how that discussion is going with Web Application Security Group. The graph normalization update, just talking about updates Greg has made and maybe talking about what we're trying to do there in a bit more depth, since we have James and Arto on the line, and then of course a discussion around the use cases document. Sunny, make sure to put the person's name colon and then what they said, so the scribe thingy will pick up on the person's name. Okay, any other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything else we should discuss today? Right, so since there's no changes to the agenda, let's go ahead and dive in. First off is the recruiting document. Brian, would you mind taking us through kind of what you did there?
Sure. Basically, I extrapolated from the points Richard was making. I didn't turn it into a bullet point, but I wanted to create sort of a narrative around why this was interesting, starting off with an advocacy position about the need for the credential standards, the fact that the W3C was the organization that should necessarily take advantage of or take lead on it, and a little bit about the background of the community group that would probably lead into the working group. So that's the basic structure of the narrative. I'm not sure if there's a particular format that this would be better in, but I just wanted to get the material out there that we could then turn into a tight, outward-facing document. Encourage people to support the creation of the working group.
Great. Thank you very much for putting that together, Brian. Very much appreciated. I think the next step is to kind of put some headers on it, and we may want to shuffle the order around a tiny bit. From what I remember, what Richard said last week was in a slightly different order, and I think a more optimal order than what's in the document right now. But the core of the document, I think, is there, which is great. So thank you very much for jumping into the breach and doing that for us. Richard, this may change what you're doing slightly. Maybe you could do more of a review of what's there and put it in something that you feel would be, I guess, ordered a bit better. Or maybe we can start editing the document based on what Brian has right now. Has anybody else been able to take a look at the document or basically look at the document or read it yet? Does anyone have any feedback or input?
I've certainly read through it and found it to be helpful to set the general context.
Can you say who you are? I'm sorry, I'm scribing and I just want to make sure.
I'm James Anderson from Berlin. Hi. My narrow concern following this group is understand the implications for graph normalization and/or canonicalization. And despite the extent of the document, I'm still at a loss for that. So that's my only very narrow feedback to it.
Got it. And sorry, forgive me, James. We should have done an introduction to you in the beginning. So we'll pick that up as the next agenda item. Just if you and Arto can provide a quick introduction to yourselves, that'd be great. But let's talk about the advocacy document and then talk about who you are and why you're interested in this group. We also have two new joiners. 661 area code and a 609 area code.
Laura Fowler, 609 area code.
Thank you, Laura. Any other feedback for Brian on the document? I guess, Brian, maybe you and I can just chat quickly offline on what the headings, what the
sure.
headings might be, in general narrative. But again, thank you so much for putting this together. This is great. I think, you know, 80% of it's there. The rest of it's just shuffling and trying to tighten the narrative up even more.
Yep.
It's already really good. Okay, anything else on the recruiting document for non-LE3C members before we move to the next agenda item? Okay, next agenda item, let's do a quick introduction to James and Arto. James, would you mind going first, please?
Sure. Well, we can introduce together. We are a RDF cloud storage service and have been operating for several years providing turnkey Sparkle and RDF services to various parties and are very much interested in understanding what kinds of implications this has for us for people who would like to provide support for credentials-based operations, what we would need to do intrinsically to make that easier.
To add to that, this is Arto speaking. To add to that, our storage architecture is also based on a content addressable design, which means that ultimately it's all about hashes for us. So we are very, very interested in particular what you guys come up with for that, given that it would make sense to align.
Great. Fantastic. Yes, thank you very much for that. Introduction, and we are very, very interested in the same thing. So the hashes, you know, the hashes are necessary, James, to answer your question from before. The reason the credentials group and the web payments group at W3C is interested in normalization of RDF data sets is because one of the proposals for the underlying data model is, of course, you know, linked data, which is RDF at LE3C. And so if we're going to express things in RDF using JSON-LD, then we are going to have to be able to digitally sign that content. Digitally signing it is vitally important when you're doing financial transactions or trying to send data that establishes somebody's aspects about that person, such as a government-issued ID card or their education credentials or their healthcare records or things of that nature. So hashing data is vitally important to the work that we're doing. We have, over the past, I guess, 4+ years, created a hashing algorithm that very, very closely mirrors the research paper that Greg just pointed us to, which is great because we had been operating on, you know, under the assumption that this was there was some strong math behind it, and the paper seemed to prove that. So it was good because two different groups came more or less to the same conclusion from two different angles. So that shows us that hopefully we're on the right path. And this is Aidan Hogan's work that I'm talking about. Getting the RDF graph normalization work started at W3C has been a challenge because many of the groups don't understand that, you know, the underpinnings aren't there yet. So many of the groups working in web payments and even somewhat in the credentials before this group started just assumed that there was some kind of digital signature mechanism for RDF when none really existed. There was no standard canonicalization normalization mechanism. So one, we're really interested in having both of you, James and Arto, in the group because you have a deep amount of expertise in this area and you have a company that depends on this stuff working. The web payments folks and I think this group, the credentials folks, also have a very deep interest in seeing this succeed at W3C because we can't build businesses that interoperate with one another without kind of this core technology. So in general, that's why this group is interested in the RDF dataset normalization, because we need it in order to digitally sign the linked data that we're creating. James, Arto, was that enough of a background, or does that align with what you thought we were doing?
Certainly, we've been following along the mailing list and have discussed some of this with Greg as well.
Okay, great, fantastic, and thank you, Greg, for getting them into the group and on the call. Okay, anything? Any questions for Arto or James before we jump to the next topic? I guess I have one question, which is you said that you're doing content addressable data, which is fantastic. That's we're doing a number of content addressable things with this normalization algorithm. Do you have your own normalization algorithm that you're using? And if you do, is it public in any way?
No. We've been relying on the published work. We don't have anything of our own, and we have published very little so far. We hope to start doing so this year.
Okay.
So we will certainly detail some designs. Perhaps this working group would be a good venue for that.
Great, fantastic. And do you know, are you working with David Booth, or did that come in from, is he doing something else with the normalization stuff?
As far as I'm aware, we're not working directly with David Booth. I know who
no,
he
I
is.
Think, right. Yeah, I think no, this is Greg. I think David's comments come from a different perspective. He certainly addresses, he has parallel needs for it, but I think his particular interest is in being able to facilitate RDF diffs, for which Dave provided a useful answer, and I think it might be, I had some thoughts that perhaps there's some ways that we might make diffs work a little bit better, but and we can talk about that a little bit more when we get into it. One thing that I, from what I know about James and Arto's work, which is true for other RDF or Sparkle type stores as well, I believe that they make use of a persistent, stable identifier for the blank nodes that they use within their system, which allows you then to serialize and deserialize when you're dealing with a store that has that context for how what the bnode identifiers are, that allows you to do a lot of the things that you would otherwise need to scolemize for. So certainly one way for creating scolem IDs is to simply, I think the RDF 1.1 notion would be to create a URI, made use of that identifier in creating a URI so that you could reliably get back and forth between something that's well known and something which is blank. And there's other systems that make use of that as well. Whereas the normalization intends to solve this problem outside of any context for storing or making these blank nodes stable. So I think that's there's sort of different approaches to dealing a problem in a domain where these things can be well known or where they're not necessarily well known.
Okay. And that's David Booth's whole thing, is he wants to make sure that we're trying to stabilize the diffing. Right. He wants to say, Greg, you might be muted. David Booth wants to stabilize the blank node IDs that are changed so that there aren't wild changes in the blank node IDs between different RDF normalization runs.
Yeah, ideally you could make changes to a document, and I do have an update I'm working on to the normalization document that describes this use case, but that if you had made a change to a graph that you could then, and the blank node identifiers were stable, then you could do a reasonable diff between the two data. As Dave pointed out in his response, there are many cases where that won't work. If you make any change to anything which is used to create a signature for a blank node, or that could create the hash, an equivalent hash, which would cause them to be named differently in the resulting output, that wouldn't work well. But there are a number of types of cases where it could work. For instance, the merger of two different graphs that had non-intersecting blank nodes that had no automorphisms within them. You would most likely get the same blank node identifiers generated, in which case a diff could be useful. But it's not something that is, it's not the intended use case, so there are some inherent problems with it. My speculation was on if there was some way to limit the algorithm to the least number of statements that would be required to create a stable signature, and if that were done in a reliable way, then it might tolerate change a little bit better. But that's just speculation.
Right. Okay. So good to know. Let's see. So the rest of the folks on the call that have never really talked about RDF graph normalization, their eyes are probably glazed over at this point. And I think it's important to point out, I mean, so Greg's saying a bunch of very important things, but this is the conversation I think that we need to have. This work is incredibly technical in nature, just the RDF graph normalization stuff itself, and the right people to work on it are probably folks like Greg and Dave Longley and Arto and James and folks like that. But what we're trying to do is get the W3C to create a separate group that works on that stuff, so that, you know, because this work is far more low level and requires a very, very certain type of skill set to work on. And I don't know how much of an overlap in the credentials work there is, other than the credentials work and the web payments work absolutely depends on it. So I think what we're trying to do, at least talking about graph normalization, is we're trying to create a separate group to work on that, so that that group can talk about issues like Greg just brought up, and focus on that with the right folks in the room, while the credentials folks can focus on the more high level stuff like expression of a credential and things of that nature. Before we kind of move on, I went ahead and moved the graph normalization discussion up in the agenda, since we're already kind of talking about it. Greg, would you like to give us an update on what you did with the graph normalization GitHub repositories?
Yeah, so the spec has a new home. It's now here, and I have made changes. It was originally lived in the jsonld.org repo, along with the other jsonld documents, and there are the set of pending changes there to reference this. It's now in the same organization, for lack of a better place right now, but there's a separate normalization repo, which includes the specification, test cases, and a sort of a home for other things going forward. And I've updated the document. What you see, if you look at that spec, it's basically relatively unchanged, structurally, except for it uses some new capabilities of respec and did some renaming. But my intention is, and I do have a separate branch where I'm starting to work on use cases and a general motivation describing the different uses for normalization. and I would like to be able to get into going through some detail, walking through examples to show how the algorithm works, and ideally restating the algorithm in a less sort of program language-like way as in more of a normative language. But quite a lot of work to do there. I do think this does need to rapidly move into a different forum since, as you note, this rapidly sort of exceeds the bandwidth for this particular group. And we might consider just creating another community group for this or just have a parallel set of calls as this thing advances.
Good suggestion. I want feedback. So one, thank you very much for doing all that work, Greg. That's fantastic. Moving it out is the right thing to do. So yes, thank you very much for doing that. As far as you know, where we continue the discussion, I'm trying to get feedback from Phil on what we should be doing. And maybe Greg, you and I can just work on Phil to make sure that he's answering. I've got another call with W3C management later today to talk about the credentials work, and so maybe I'll start being more aggressive with the need for a separate group, an official group at W3C that picks this work up and goes with it. I know in general they've been very supportive of creating such a group. I think the problem is that, you know, like always, everyone's got a million things that they're doing, and so the group, you know, convincing the W3C membership to create another working group and getting 5% of the membership on board is a fairly monumental task. So we need to sit down and have a powwow with Phil and maybe the security folks and maybe some of the other linked data folks at W3C to see if they could fast track some of this work. Anything else on the graph normalization stuff before we move on?
I think I mentioned on the mailing list that I have my own implementation now of this algorithm, which passes all the tests. And I think thanks so much to Dave's help on that. I think we also identified some issues, mostly with the previous version of the algorithm, the 2012 version of the graph normalization. I haven't heard if Dave, if the results we're now using for the data set normalization actually match up with Dave's work, it would be good to find out. But it works. It's stable.
Yeah, thanks for doing all that, Greg. I haven't had time to update the implementations. We have three implementations of the 2012 algorithm. I haven't had time to move those to the 2015 or make that an option. But it's not a lot of work. I just need to put aside the time to do it. I'm not swamped with other things. But thank you very much for doing another implementation and helping so much with the spec.
Yeah, this is fantastic news because we've got two interoperable implementations before we even start the W3C work, and that rarely happens. Okay, anything else on this before we jump to the next agenda item? I do have one more recruiting thing that I forgot to mention. Actually, before we move on, Greg, what do you think next steps are? I mean, I'm guessing you and I need to just corner Phil and ask him what W3C is going to do about this. We've been making really good progress lately. And then the other thing is we need to figure out where we might want to move this work other than the credentials group.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of evidence given the volume of mail on the normalization topic on this list as well as Semantic Web to show that there is broad interest in this. There is previous work, but none of it has resulted in a spec, so there's definitely time to do this. Timble also chimed in with his own work on this that he referenced as one of the design notes, which I've been starting to dissect. So I think that there is work to do on the specification, which can proceed. It would benefit from having more collaborators in a dedicated forum for it. I would say that either we, the lowest bar would be to just create a community group and solicit membership for that to work specifically on this. But I think the normal process of turning that into a working group probably isn't going to fit our time frame. So, yeah, I do think we need to try to figure out how to fast track something like this going through. And if you want to try to have a separate conversation with Phil, I'd be happy to participate in that and, of course, participate in such a group.
Okay, great. Thanks, Greg. The last thing I talked with them, this was at TPAC last year, was to create a microworking group, not go through the standard W3C process. But, you know, everyone understands that this needs to be done and as soon as possible. So we'll continue that discussion. I'll rope you in on that discussion with Phil, Greg. So thanks. Okay, next topic, recruiting W3C members. I spent the better part of last week sending out, I went through the 400 members that W3C has. I picked out 140 organizations that we have talked to in the past about the credentials work or that are clearly would be affected by the credentials work, sent them a link to the executive summary, the more W3C technical executive summary, as well as a link to the questionnaire so that we could start polling W3C membership about their interests. So we've got 140 organizations that we're waiting to hear back from. A number of them since last night, you know, a number of them have responded already, most of them in a positive way. Some of them, actually just one of them, in a very curious, interesting way, in that they've said that they don't feel that W3C should do anything about identity or credentials ever. So we've got a broad range, but most of them have been, yes, of course, this is important. Yes, of course, we'll participate. So that's good. Any questions on recruiting W3C members? Keep in mind that this is a separate initiative from recruiting non-W3C members, which is the document that Brian Sletten and Richard are working on. All right, next topic up is the credential management API. Extension, getting an update from Dave on where the discussion is with Web AppSec. Dave, I forget, when that went out. Was that last Thursday? Like, were we able to talk with this group about the proposal, the document?
If memory serves me right, I think we did give everyone access to the document. I don't remember now, so I'll put a link into.
Put it. It's there.
Okay, there you go. This is the Google Doc that we wrote with some details about an extension to the Web AppSec Credential Management API. We've been getting some comments back from Mike West, who is the editor of that spec, and we've been responding to those and just kind of carrying on a discussion in this document, and we'll have to discuss more and probably get on a call with him at some point soon.
Any thoughts on, in general, have they been positive? I mean, I think in general, he seems to be interested in responding and really trying to understand what we're saying, so I'm feeling fairly positive that he's at least trying to get his head wrapped around what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We have also gotten a number of comments offline, either directly to me or to Dave and myself, talking about this disagreement at W3C, at least at the architectural level, on whether or not same origin or cross origin should be the future of the web. So, for example, same origin basically means that the only thing, the only website APIs, browser APIs should be talking to is the website that they're on. So, for example, if you're on Google.com, any API that's invoked at Google.com should only retrieve, store, and work with data that the browser knows about for Google.com. You shouldn't be able to reach across to Yahoo or any other site that you visited and get data from those sites and send it to Google. There are cases where this same origin policy is broken, specific places like, for example, cross-origin resource sharing breaks this model, including JavaScript files and CSS files from other websites break this model. But in general, the security model for the web is same origin. And so we're getting pushback because the type of credentials we're talking about are cross-origin credentials. They are created on website A and then stored on website B and delivered to website C. So that is a cross-origin security model, and those are fundamentally much more difficult to protect than a same-origin scenarios. So the biggest pushback we've seen right now is this whole same-origin, cross-origin thing. We expect that we are going to be able to make good arguments against this this argument against cross-origin credentials, mainly because, like, you do that in the real world. You get a driver's license from the DMV and you give it to other people so that they can verify attributes about you or your identity. It is going to be it is not going to be easy, but we think that there's a good set of arguments for cross-origin credentials. So, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems to be the biggest. Is the biggest pushback. The second biggest pushback is why is this any different from OAuth and SAML? And so we have to address those concerns as well. The short answer is that, you know, OAuth doesn't specify a digital signature mechanism for the credentials, and it's more like giving access to your account from another website rather than you providing information from one website to another. So OAuth doesn't line up that well. OpenID Connect is a bit too OpenID Connect is very super provider centric, meaning if you're Google and Facebook, it works well, but if you are a small provider, identity provider, it doesn't work so well. So that's the general response to OpenID Connect. And then the response to SAML is that, you know, SAML had been tried and failed. A number of its deficiencies come from, you know, using XML or having a more difficult attribute signature mechanism or not really following the architecture of the web when it was built. So while it does work, it has not been very successful at being deployed more widely than in very large organizations. But we need to formalize those responses, put them in a blog post or a paper that this group puts out, because that's where we're seeing a lot of friction right now. Any questions about the credential management API or pushback that we're seeing on it?
On the same origin issue, you did mention one of the exceptions today is a CSS structure that kind of wanders. You know, if you have authentication of the certificates turned on your machine, you'll find a billion when they're broken, you know, in a day, it seems like. You know, I get the warning all the time. And it's wandering off. And I think you're saying that most of those relationships are managed by the home site page owner, but I don't know how true that is anymore. Do you think that's true? I mean, they're so random sometimes. that, you know, some of these things just drift into God knows where in the web, and they come back and report, well, this certificate's, and I only know it, I'm not tracing it myself, I only know because it comes back that this certificate's no good, which I just cancel them all out because I don't take ones that are bad.
Right. Well,
isn't that one of the major exceptions, and isn't there a huge hole in that already?
Yes and no. So it really depends on the type of attack that you're talking about, and that's usually where the browser vendors.
I'm not talking about an attack. I'm really talking about the way business is normally, as opposed to a security hole.
So your question is very broad.
What I'm trying to say is that this is an if they're trying to say that there's a cross-origin argument, I'm just wondering if this is a good counter-argument. The cross-origin argument says right now there's lots of things that can actually cause mischief and annoyance to the customer. This is the opposite. So we're actually trying to provide a benefit using cross-origin purposes as opposed to the other way around.
Right. So this is Richard, right?
This is me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sonny was asking. There are about 15 things that we care about when it comes to securing the cross-origin credential stuff. There are roughly, I think the last time we counted, there are 15 different ways to attack what we're proposing. And that makes everyone really, really nervous. Mentioned like two of them.
I understand it better now.
Mentioned two of them, right? One of them is that there are 300 certificate authorities around the world, and, you know, we've got certificate authorities that include the U.S. government and China. And China and the U.S. government on a regular basis provide security certificates that allow you to snoop on each other country's trafficking data, right? So that part is not really secure. So people can snoop and inject information and that kind of stuff. So it's not secure from that perspective. The other perspective is that there are other places where it might be okay to not be as secure. So for example, if you're loading a cascading style sheet, which all it does is it modifies how the page looks, right? If somebody injects something nasty into that, they're not really going to steal information from you. They're going to make the page look terrible, or they might hide a button or make it, you know, they might be a nuisance, but they're not going to steal your social security number or things of that nature.
That's not entirely true.
Well, yes, I know. So there are recent attacks now that allow you to do things with the graphics card that allow people to use things like CSS to actually read what's on your screen. Right, so this is attacks that we thought were not possible before that are definitely possible today. So someone could by loading something that just affects the visual content of your screen, or uses some of the JavaScript timers, they can read exactly what you're looking at on the screen with an enormous amount of accuracy, enough so that, you know, optical character recognition can be used on it. They can basically know exactly what you're looking at all times. So the security model on the web is broken in some very specific ways. But in the ways that it's broken, it's fairly well known what the attacks are. Anytime you propose a new way of doing cross-origin anything, you have to go through a very detailed security review. And so that's
I understand what you're saying now. I didn't quite catch that was the point you were making. I thought it was both contractual and security related, but I get it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, here's the short of it is, if you want to do cross-origin, this is the developers, the browser developers speaking. So if you want to do cross-origin, that's great. You're going to create an enormous amount of work for the rest of us, and we'd rather not do that work because we're not convinced that the upside is that great. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to go and do the work, do the thorough security analysis, go through security review, all that kind of stuff, and it's got to be airtight by the time that we're done with it. So that's the main thing. We're in the first part of that conversation where they're saying, you know, you could just not go down that path and just do same origin. And what we're saying is it's impossible for us to do that with these types of credentials, because they have to be issued by a third party, and you have to be able to send them to another website. So yeah, that's the biggest pushback we're having right now is that they don't understand the amount of security work that we've done, and so their first response is, "I bet you $100 that you guys have security holes." So that's where we are in the conversation right now, anyway.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Manu, a quick question, if I may.
Yep. Yes, please. Go ahead.
This is Arto speaking. Is there any provision in the scope of this working group to be for credentials to be sent over other channels than the web, over other channels than HTTP?
The way that we can express it is protocol agnostic, meaning that, you know, if we express it as linked data, it can be expressed as an RDF document in JSON-LD or Turtle or RDF XML or a variety of different mechanisms. And so that does not have to travel over the web. It could, you know, travel over SneakerNet. I think we are not going to really be able to propose something solid without involving the web and HTTP and those kinds of things.
Certainly I would expect that the web is the primary use case, but on the other hand, we have seen in the last few years other important channels emerging, such as in the cryptocurrency realm.
Yes.
And I figure this work is very, very interesting potentially for that as well.
Yes, absolutely. So we're talking with Juan Batiz Bennett. He's doing the interplanetary file system stuff, which is a content addressable network, or partially a content addressable network. And we're talking with, of course,
right,
the cryptocurrency folks as well. And so they're actually reusing JSON-LD for IPFS for their content content addressable stuff. So I think we have some experimental proof that it can work that way. The question is, you know, what's W3C going to do over the next 5 to 10 years? How are those protocols going to integrate with the web, or are they going to run in parallel to the web? Those are really, you know, those are conversations. We need to keep those in mind, but I don't think we're going to be able to resolve those before we get into a credentials working group and create it. Certainly,
okay,
the web payments group cares about that stuff.
Okay, that answers my question. Thanks.
Okay, anything else on the credential management API before we move to use cases? All right, so the use cases, I saw Carrie and Nate in the use cases document a bit earlier. Carrie, Nate, could you give us an update on where we are with the use cases?
Cool. I don't know that Carrie's audio is working very well, but I'm here. Credentials use cases document looks pretty good. I added a short little example or introduction sentence where there was a TBD. So that's sort of the only new content from today. And you can see a couple other really minor suggestions from me, like ready to be accepted. Sort of in response to some comments where it's like, oh, we need something else here. I think it's looking fairly complete overall. There are just a couple little questions here and there hanging out in the margins, but I think most of them could be resolved very quickly. Did we want to take a look at those in particular?
I didn't have anything in mind in particular. I mean, I think the main concern that I have is, do we think we've covered all the use cases that we want to have covered in version 1.0? Answering that question will tell us if we should then just jump into refining the document. So Nate, Carrie, do you feel like we've covered pretty much the use cases that the Badge Alliance has looked at and that we've created here in the credentials CG and the web payments CG?
Yeah, I think we're pretty good. Go ahead, Carrie.
I think the one area where we could use some more work is in revoking.
I added revoking. Revoking, got it. Okay.
It was blank before. I added just some motivation. I wanted to run it by you, and then
you know, we could put in some use cases there.
Got it. I see it now. The one thing that we may also want to do is get someone to do an accessibility review. I know that the Paciello group at W3C is great at doing accessibility, but they raised a whole bunch of really interesting points on the web payments use cases that I feel that they could really help us out. Like, for example, you know, they talked about people with people on the autism spectrum and how using this stuff would work for them, and how, you know, using this stuff at a kiosk would affect someone that has sight impairment or mobility impairment, things of that nature. So I think that may be the only, and we may not want to ask for that review until we are done making a full editorial pass over the document. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense, Brian. Another question I had was the exceptions under issue credential to recipient.
Which page?
We have some notes there under exceptions.
Which page, Carrie?
This is under issuer issues credential to recipient, under claims. So it's on page 8, top of page 8.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Okay. All right, so I think, let's see, I think I'll certainly go through and look at all the comments and try and resolve a number of them this week, since the communication stuff's out to those W3C members. Nate, Sonny, Carrie, what do you think the best next step is? Like, should we just go in and start refining the documents, since folks feel that we have all the use cases in there? And just elaborate on places that we feel need to be elaborated on? Or do you, like, I know one thing that we need to do is at the very end of the document, there's this credentials in the real world section where we want to talk about workforce training and professional licensing and the university degree. And we want to use these credential operations, kind of talking about issuing, revoking, consuming, managing, endorsing, things of that nature.
Hey
Manu, are you aiming to just sort of like tell a story for each one of those that brings in some of those relevant things, like a couple paragraphs or something like that?
Yeah, but it's really, so if you look at the, let me just try and find the web payments one, web payments use cases. This one, I'm getting a link. So if you look at this link I'm putting in IRC right now, there's an example of kind of really tight stories based on what you're doing. So payments is a little easier to talk about than the credential stuff, because payments kind of have a flow of a beginning and end. But in each one of those, it's just a one-sentence description of what's done in each phase, instead of having a big narrative. So that's just to get people to understand, you know, what does a, you know, digital driver's license look like when we use it on the web? You know, what does a professional license look like when we use it on the web? So that people can kind of understand that in a story. So yes, to answer your question, Nate, yes, that's what we're going for, but we want to keep them very short and tight, just one sentence for each operation, like issuing or revoking or managing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I suppose. And do you think any of that would be redundant with the little sentences that we put in the previous section? It's like, if you look at that, I don't know, at an endorsement on middle of page 15, there's two little stories in there under endorsement about, you know, who the different characters are who use it, and then, you know, a little bit about their motivation. Are we duplicating that material, or...
No. So we're trying not to duplicate the material. It shouldn't be duplicated. So basically, each one of those micro use cases above is supposed to focus on a very specific part of the whole credential process. So like endorsement would just talk about the endorsement part of it. It wouldn't talk about how the credential was issued up to that point or how it was managed up to the point. It would just talk about the endorsement part. And then we would kind of take that or could take that and weave it into a story. Or we could use a completely different story. Like, for example, the driver's license one, I don't think we really talk about driver's licenses in the use cases. And so that story at the bottom would go from all the way from issuing to managing to consuming and maybe even revoking. Whereas the endorsing use case in the middle of the document or towards the end of the document is just talking about endorsement. It's not talking about anything else around, you know, when endorsement would happen. Did that
Great.
Help?
Yeah, I'll have some time this week to fill out several of these, and then so we can get some back and forth on that before next Tuesday's call and hopefully have it in a format that is, you know, we can start talking about whether it's the right time to bring it into Respec instead of the Google Docs format.
Okay. All right. Sounds great. The other thing that, so the what's really been helping, at least me, to understand what the next steps are is that the web payments group is like 3 or 4 months ahead of us in the documents that they're creating. So, and they've gone through an enormous amount of churn and discussion about what the next steps are, but that's resulted in laying out a pretty clear path for us. So, you know, we did use cases first in that group. We got that out, and now we're working on, in parallel, we're working on requirements derived from the use cases, and we're also talking about capabilities, like what capabilities are required by the web platform to make these use cases a reality in the next 2 to 3 years. And then once we've talked about capabilities, we talk about, you know, the use cases are very broad, the capabilities are very broad, then we talk about a roadmap. This is exactly what we're going to implement. This is exactly when we're going to implement it. These is exactly the W3C groups that are responsible for doing the work and just kind of laying that out. So we have, I'm bringing that up to basically mention that we have a lot of work ahead of us still, but at least in my mind, it's fairly clear the order that we do the work in. Another thing to mention on the use cases is that I'm having a chat with a W3C about credentialing and how we're going to create these groups at W3C and coordinate all the work. So Web Payments is going to be proposing a charters, credentials is going to be one of them, and we have to propose to W3C management how credentials feeds into the other authentication work that W3C is doing. So they're doing two types of hardware-based authentication, new working groups being created to do that. There is definitely going to be a new Web Payments group that's created, and the Web Payments group has already decided that credentials is vitally important for them. So how is the payments group going to coordinate with the credentials group, going to coordinate with the authentication groups? So all really good stuff. And the sooner we get through the use cases and those other documents, the better. I believe that the proposal, the charter proposal, is going to go forward. And this is a big if. And I don't want to say it's a big if, but it's still an if. If the credentials working group charter is put forward for vote at W3C, it is probably going to be in September. And when September rolls around, we should have all of these documents pretty much done: use cases, requirements, capabilities, and roadmap, so that we can hand that over to the working group and they can just execute, because that's what they're supposed to do. They're not supposed to spend time doing what we're doing here, which is kind of discussing how, you know, all the use cases and how all this stuff fits together. They're supposed to basically get a charter and execute on that charter as quickly as possible. If we don't have these documents done by then, there's a chance that we'll be put into a holding pattern where they're an interest group, a credentials interest group, will try to finish off the documents that we have. So all that to say that we need to get through use cases and requirements and capabilities and a roadmap as quickly as possible. I think that is achievable by the September timeframe. But just a heads up to those that are doing work that I don't think that it's going to, the rate of work that we have to do is going to let up over the summer. Okay. Anything else on use cases before we end the call today? Anything else that we need to be aware of before the call next week? Okay, if not, Nate, Sunny, Carrie, and I will focus on the use cases document this week. Greg and I will talk to Phil Archer and see what we can do with the normalization stuff. And we will reconvene here same time next week on Tuesday. Thanks, everyone, for the call. See you later on. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.